A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging performing arts organizations. Today, we'll hear about a new opera that deals with racism and the fear and love facing Black parents as their children get older. Composer Susan Kander and soprano Roberta Gumbel collaborated on the one-person chamber opera called DWB, Driving While Black, and it will be presented online later this month by the Baruch Performing Arts Center. I'll speak with Kander and Gumbel, as well as Ted Altshuler, the Performing Arts Center's director, about the work and its place in our present-day conversations about social justice. Let's start off with a look at some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The New York Philharmonic and Boston Symphony Orchestras have canceled the remainder of their originally announced 2020-2021 seasons because of continued concerns over the COVID-19 pandemic. The New York Philharmonic, which had previously canceled performances through early January, said that it plans to expand its online performances through its NYPhil Plays On portal, including some that will be recorded at venues such as Merkin Hall at Kaufman Music Center and Manhattan School of Music. The Philharmonic also plans to resume its NYPhil Bandwagon initiative, holding outdoor pull-up concerts, which presented more than 80 such events this fall. The Boston Symphony has scrapped its winter and spring performances and its holiday pop season. The orchestra will begin recording new video content in Symphony Hall with smaller groups of musicians at the end of this month, and will create a recorded holiday pops program led by Keith Lockhart and an online youth and family concert. Additional details about its digital season plans for the next 2 months will be announced October 28th. The Chicago Symphony Orchestra also extended its cancellations, although only through the end of March. The orchestra hopes to reschedule some of the canceled events and hold some smaller-scale in-person performances with a reduced audience. It will also continue offering online programs, including archival performance videos and new streaming and on-demand content. Conductor and viol player Jordi Savall is among those musicians who most recently tested positive for COVID-19. According to a statement on his Facebook page, Savall tested positive following performances with the Orchestra Le Concert des Nations at the NFM Hall in Poland, despite taking precautions. Several members of the NFM choir, who were scheduled to join the ensemble in recording Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, also developed symptoms. According to the statement, Savall is resting and has a normal temperature, but plans to remain in his home through the end of the month. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the world of the performing arts.
Scene: a suburban apartment complex. Young man in hoodie.
Behind the news headlines and social discussions of equality and discrimination, from incidents of police brutality to all too common everyday examples of broader inequality and bias, lie some very fraught decisions and emotions faced by Black parents as they try to raise their children. Some of these reflections came up during conversations between composer Susan Kander, who is white, and soprano Roberta Gumbel, who is Black, and the result is the monodrama DWB, Driving While Black. A concert version of it premiered in Kansas City in 2019 and was scheduled to have its New York debut last March at the Baruch Performing Arts Center. When that performance was canceled because of COVID-19, they set about filming a production that will stream later this month through the Arts Center's website. I spoke via Zoom with Kander and Gumbel, and also with Ted Altshuler, director of the Baruch Performing Arts Center, about the production and its immediate and perhaps heightened relevance today.
Roberta and I have been working together, which is to say that she has been singing my stuff and she has been the voice in my ear for over 25 years. About 4 years ago, she went on the faculty at University of Kansas School of Music, and I pounced on her because I figured at some point she was going to have to do a faculty recital, and that was a really great excuse to write something for her. I also realized that I knew two other people on that faculty who are the extraordinary duo New Morse Code, which is to say a cello and percussion duo doing amazing cutting edge music. So I knew three people on the faculty and I pounced. I talked to Roberta and I said, let's do something. I want to write something for you. And we talked about a whole lot of different possibilities and ideas, and she was game. And we started cycling through ideas. It turned out, as it happened, that at the very same time, her son was approaching driving age. He was getting his learner's permit, and then he was getting his license. And I, who also have two sons, who have none of the concerns and anxieties that she did. My sons are older, but they're white, and they grew up in New York City, and we knew they were never going to drive because we don't have a car. And we were so thrilled to be excused from that whole world of anxiety, driving and teenagers, plus being Black and driving and being young. Then my hair was on fire for Roberta. And I kept saying, how are you going to live through this? So we ended up, after many different possible topics, I kind of pushed at her. I think that's a fair statement. And I said, I really think we need to write about this. So she said, yes.
Roberta, what were your thoughts as she was going through this idea? And what were you then able to bring to that aspect, even before you started working on the libretto?
Well, Susan and I had had dinner table conversations about this issue. So it was very personal, and we hadn't even thought about DWB at that point as a piece of music. So when she pounced, I said, well, who's going to write the libretto? And she said, well, I'll find somebody. And she looked, and then she came back and she said, well, you have to write it. And I said, but I'm not an author. And she said, well, you're going to write this, you can do it. So I did it. And it started flowing from personal experiences, conversations I had with my brothers. I have four brothers. I have lots of nephews, about experiences they'd had. And it just kind of came together that way. And so I started sending sketches of scenarios or scenes to Susan, and she would look at them and say, how about this? And what about that? Or, oh, that's great. Or, oh, I don't know. And it came together. Susan discovered the structure of it. And certainly musically, it had to have a structure that she wanted to apply to it. So once we started working with her structure, then the scenes became, I think, more compact and more concise. Maybe each scene is very, very separate. So it just evolved from dinner conversation. And as you noted at the beginning, from where we are in the world right now. And this, you again are right, it didn't predate any of these problems, but now the problems are so much more, people are more aware of them than they've ever been.
I would like to reiterate that these conversations were happening over 3 years ago, 3.5, almost 4 years ago, really 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we started writing 2017, I think.
In the piece, there are references to some very high profile cases like Trayvon Martin and Philando Castile and things like that. Floyd hadn't even been killed yet. There were so many newer instances that we could have incorporated, but most of them are news bulletin kind of familiar ideas, and then a lot of things that happened to people in my family. So it became something very personal, but clearly very national as well. It's very public as well.
Right.
And Ted, how did you see this fitting in what was going to be your season for last winter, spring?
It is certainly a discussion of the moment. Our identity is a function of where we're housed, which is at Baruch College, which is part of the City of New York University system. And the CUNY reason for being is all about transformative education for people who otherwise would not have an opportunity to be educated. has been true for the history of the university. The Art Center, BPAC, looks to put both the makeup of our community and the fruits of our inquiry to embody those things in programs. And the two things that we do that are distinctive are to have artists come into our space in residence as they are making or putting together work and interact with our community about things that are important to them. And then the second thing is that a lot of our projects sit at the nexus of art and social justice. So this project was a no-brainer for me in terms of its relevance to our own community and the wider community. But that became even truer as we got more isolated during this pandemic and the incidences in our communities of violence against Black men and women multiplied over weeks, over such a short period of time. So this couldn't be more germane to one of the most crucial social conversations we're having right now. And that's why when last spring, I was already excited to do the piece because of what it was, and we were going to do it live. But as it became clear that we could no longer present live programming, and this conversation wasn't just a constant hum in the background, it became a shout. I reached back out to Susan and Roberta and said, we really just have to do this, but we have to do it right now. We have to do it in the way we can do it right now.
There were so many different ways that you could tell this type of story, again, given all the examples we're seeing on the news, the different personal stories. What made a mother's discussion with her son the way you wanted to approach it?
Well, I think for me, Susan asking me to do it, I could only write from my own experience because, again, I'm not an author, and rarely do singers get to tell their own stories. So it was very liberating in a way to just say, oh, you mean I can just talk about me or things I want to talk about? I don't have to speak someone else's words. So because it grew from conversations about my being a mother to a young Black adolescent, it came very easily to write from that viewpoint. I couldn't speak in someone else's voice, so I spoke in my own. And while there are instances of autobiographical material in it, it's really not meant to bear my soul or to tell my personal life. But my world isn't much different from very many other Black mothers. And so it became a broader, you know, I represent a lot of mothers. I'm not just telling the Roberta story.
What was that like then to perform it? What were you able to bring into that you may not bring into or have the opportunity to bring into other works?
When we shot the video last month or whenever we did it, now I can't even remember, I found it to be really easy. The singing is a whole nother thing. We're not talking about my singing, but my approach to how I wanted to look and perform it, I didn't have to think about it that much because it was really just me. Sometimes I'd catch a look, a glance of myself and realize, oh my gosh, that's what my kid has had to look at for the last 5 years, this anxiety, this frown on my face. But it came fairly easily. I hope it reads on the video, but I didn't have to dig very deep because it was already me. I didn't have to apply someone else's world to it. I hadn't thought about that until we performed it on film, because then I could see myself and I go, well, yeah, that's kind of how I look. It didn't have to be someone else. So it was easy.
Susan, how did you bring the music into this? You mentioned you already had an idea of the musicians you wanted to work with. How did you then bring that together to give the musical context to this?
What I received from Roberta and what we designed was a kind of traditional narrative story family story that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. A kid is born and grows up and eventually needs to get in the car and drive by himself. But punctuating that personal narrative story are all these scenes from the zeitgeist that we have decided to call bulletins. So the score is divided into scenes and bulletins. And I knew that the scenes were going to have one kind of sound world that would be stuff that was thematically related and would have a continuity to it, but that each bulletin was an opportunity to present a completely new sound picture. And that was super exciting because these three performers, when you put voice with the percussion and the cello, and the cellist is doing much more than just playing the cello, and the percussionist has 20 some odd instruments at his disposal, you can get a very dense and very varied sound picture. So the opportunities were huge within the limitations of having only three people. And that was very exciting to me.
What was the video process like in terms of how it may or may not have differed from what it would have been like in person, being able to do it before a live audience, a present audience?
It has been done. We've had four performances, including a reading, in front of live audiences and a variety of audiences in a variety of venues. And that's critical because all three performers got to grow into and sort of come to own the score, so that when it came time to do the video, they were really a team that was tight and knew each other and caught each other and could breathe in each other's spaces. That was brilliant.
Something else that really took shape in the video as opposed to live is in the live performances, the New Morse code is one side of the stage, and then I pretty much have the playing space. And I never get to really pay much attention to them because I'm doing my thing. But in the video, the videographers made a wonderful decision to really highlight the ensemble. So while I'm singing, the camera often cuts away to what they're doing to show just how much they are integrated within the drama of this piece. They're not just accompaniment. They are really fully, you see it on their faces, you see it in their movement. They're so committed to the drama in the scene. And I think most performances, you don't get to see that highlighted. So I think that's a very exciting part about this form that it's taken. It's very different than when it was live.
I just want to say it's also the video that we made and that we wanted to make is very different from what you might expect a video of an opera, where there's two or three cameras and you might have two or three angles, but basically you're seeing the stage and you're seeing the people on it and it looks like it's all happening inside a proscenium box. This is a very different approach to filming opera, and we're excited about that.
And Ted, what type of audience are you anticipating, and how is that playing into some of the other things you've been working on this past fall? Virtually.
Our first attempt to reach out to the community actually came with my reaching out to colleagues in the field to see if I couldn't get some partners to present this video along with us, because the discussion is happening on a national level, not merely in one location. So Opera Omaha became a collaborator, a very enthusiastic collaborator. It was a way for them to present something at a time when it's difficult to produce in their genre, in the operatic genre, and also to be a part of a conversation that's going on, particularly in American cities. So that was the first kind of reach out we did. I think that this piece reaches to a variety of potential audiences. I think people who are interested in opera that's happening now will find it a very accessible and exciting piece. I think people who enjoy music theater, if that's really so different from opera, for some people it is, will also find something to like in it, in that it is an engaging piece of theater performed in English with music. So it's very accessible from a theatrical as well as a musical point of view. I think that it has potential appeal to anyone who's interested in the social and political conversation that's going on in our country. And as somebody who's presenting it out of the context of the university, I'm hoping to draw people to the music theater genre who might not otherwise go there because they're interested in the story. The story is relevant to them. So those are the kinds of groups we're reaching out to within our community. We're reaching to our students and our faculty and our alumni, but the advantage of being virtual is that we are not geographically limited. So we're attempting to have a broader conversation with people who are looking to think about, have a dialogue about the DWB conversation and the broader conversation about racial justice in our country. Mm-hmm. And I think the brevity of the piece means that if you're an opera novice, you don't have to be nervous. It's delivered in a way that, I mean, you barely know it started and it's done. It's so, but it's also the piece's power, that you're not busy sitting there thinking about what is distant from you. It is an intimate piece that really draws you in. What attracted to me about the intimacy of the piece when we were going to do it live. And I think the videographers found a language that emphasizes that and puts the viewer into the head of the character. Feel like your inner thoughts. It's really nicely done.
The environment has changed so much between March and where we are now. And I was wondering if any of you wanted to elaborate on any ways in which that has changed or altered either the work itself or the way you wanted to present it, given the fact that this is so in the forefront now of our discussions and our national mood.
I think the sort of total shutdown that we have all experienced because of COVID, coinciding with the explosion in violence and the explosion in people being able to stop and think and react, by people I mean also media, I think there is something salutary to be taken from that, that I think that the video of DWB, to get specific about this, has the potential to be more useful as a platform to invite people into the discussion than three performances at Baruch, which were already going to be wonderful. We were thrilled to pieces about that. But now we have an opportunity to have a larger, longer lasting voice, which has in its turn become more necessary or something to be hoped for even more strongly because of all of the history and all of the violence that's happened since March. So it's this kind of strange confluence of all the bad plus this little sliver of good that I think is hopefully going to allow people way beyond the video of this opera to take time and stop and think and try to grapple with this moment so that it doesn't just go whizzing by, which is what has been happening. It's been violent thing after violent thing and death after death after death after death. And I sort of hope that with the shutdown will come some thoughtfulness, some time and space to address these issues in a way that we have not taken the time and space to address them before.
I totally agree with what Susan's saying. And I think the enduring nature of the protests that started several months ago, that they weren't a 1 week here and gone tomorrow kind of thing, that they continue. And I think most people in the Black community are very, very hopeful that this time will matter. Not DWBR peace, but that this time in history, something will in fact change. And our piece is a very tiny little microcosm of, a very small world within the bigger world. Our piece could be three times as long if we just included more bulletins about the things that are happening today. I think we're all hopeful, at least reasonable people, I think, are hopeful that things will change. So if DWB can contribute to the conversation, that's wonderful. And that's obviously what we hope will happen. We did this piece a year ago in two different venues, one in a concert hall where most of the people who came were opera or new music lovers. And then we did it in a Black church 2 days later. And the difference in the audience, the difference in the response was profound. Even the way I played it was different, because the first night I felt like I had to explain things. And in the Black church, I felt like I was just sharing one more story. So I think it touches people in different ways. It reaches ears that maybe hadn't thought about it before, and then it falls on deaf ears, unfortunately, sometimes, but it also falls on ears that are full of it already. So hopefully the piece will strike a nerve.
I'm thinking too that, people could look at the title or the description and say, this is a political matter. It's not a political matter, it's a humanitarian matter. And the opera really drives home, I think, experiencing the piece is an exercise in compassion, because it asks you to step inside somebody else's experience. And compassion is one of the best teachers we have. And we're a little short on it at the moment. This is a time to come together with yourself in the moment and take time to step into another person's shoes and imagine the world from their point of view. And I think it's very valuable in that way.
That was my conversation with Ted Altshuler, director of the Baruch Performing Arts Center, composer Susan Kander, and soprano and librettist Roberta Gumbel. DWB, Driving While Black, will be available from October 23rd to 29th at the Baruch Performing Arts Center website. Tickets and other information are available at baruch.cuny.edu/BPAC. I hope you enjoy the conversations that I bring you each week on A Tempo, focusing on the changes and challenges facing the performing arts. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.